one might wonder why I would pick a song, a tune like that, you know, St. Peter, St. Paul, and St. Patrick. Well, I'll tell you now, this wasn't just, this, a lot of thought went into this, because actually, friends, I might tell you that there aren't that many Irish tunes that, personify prayers that include St. Paul. However, we're going to have a new St. Paul, and who better to tell us about this? It's a news-breaking story than Ray Flynn, former U.S. ambassador to the Vatican, mayor of Boston, and author, by the way, of the book Pope John Paul II, the Pope and the Man, ambassador, mayor, Ray
Good
Flynn.
Good morning. It's great to be on the program again. What a great day we have in
Isn't
here in
it?
Boston.
Absolutely. Absolutely terrific. And we just found out that Ireland is going through a heat wave, and it's expected temperatures up there in the 80s to continue for the next 2 weeks.
I'd like to be sitting in a nice little cool pub in Kerry, up in McGillicuddy's Reeks, having a nice Guinness, and then get on my bicycle and go over the Cork and Kerry Mountains and meet my relatives down in Cork and Clonakilty. That's what I'd like to be doing right now, after listening to you and being on your program.
Yeah, but listen, Ambassador, would you think maybe you put that in the reverse order? Maybe you ought to go on the bike and then have the pint.
No, because it's easier going downhill, you know what I mean, after you have a couple of pints. You know, you don't want to go up the hill with a couple of pints.
That's true. You wind up not only walking up there, but carrying the bike with you. Listen, it is, and we were delighted, and no better man to tell us the good news, the glad tidings coming from Pope Francis, who's going to pick your man. As author of Pope John Paul II, the Pope and the Man, for canonization. First of all, tell us, if you will, I'm former ambassador to the Vatican, what is the process? How does one become a saint?
Well, he has to be go through a scrutiny of people at the Vatican, where they completely examine their background. But in addition to that, Adrian, he has to have fulfilled two verified miracles in his lifetime, helping somebody. The recent one is, they just came to fruition on, is a woman from Costa Rica who was praying for Pope John Paul II and praying that she would get better, and she did. So the medical team of religious and non-religious people verified that, so that's where we are at this point in time. The process has been completed. The canonization will happen sometime either in October or December.
Now, it has always been, and I don't think there's any relaxation of the rules. Yes, there's a minimum of two miracles that have to take place during the lifetime of the candidate to be sainted. Has there been situations where those miracles take place long after the passing of the candidate?
Yeah, it does. Because of the issue of communication was much different years back, but right now there's such a record of John Paul II capturing his history. You know, it's been portrayed so vividly on television and movies and everything. So
Right. Everybody
has a real record of his history.
How did you decide upon writing about the life, the Pope, and John Paul II, the Pope and the Man? What prompted you to pick this particular pope, and because, as I say, very little had, much was written, and, you know, in passing, but I think you're sitting down to write a book about him in particular. It would be interesting to know what was your motivation. And
well, Adrian, actually, I met then Karol Wojtyła, Archbishop of Krakow, in 1969, long before he became Pope. I met him here in Boston. I was born in a Polish community, Our Lady of Częstochowa, St. Mary's of Częstochowa, so I had a good identification with the Polish community going way back. And then I met him again in 1976, and we kind of struck up a relationship. We exchanged communications back and forth. Now, of course, 1978, he becomes Pope, and we had a celebration in Boston, and I'm sure every Polish community in the United States. And then 1979, after he left Ireland on September 30th, his first trip to the United States was to Boston in October 1st, 1979, and then, of course, I met him when John O'Connor became Cardinal Archbishop of New York in 1984, and just carried on this relationship. So I probably know him as long as any American, except for some clergy people, I assume. And I'm able to give that political dimension to his career that I find absolutely fascinating. Nazism, communism, all of that.
Right. Yeah, and the Nazi tyranny communist oppression in his own native Poland.
Right, exactly. The Nazis occupied. They moved into Gdansk in Poland, September 30th, 1939. That, of course, was almost the beginning of World War II. So the heroic Polish people had to deal with not only Nazism. They closed the churches and the synagogues and all that. And then right after they freed themselves of Nazism, then Joseph Stalin moved in there and he took over. So John Paul II has been fighting oppression and tyranny since he was a young man, young boy.
Right. Now, we're not to gather, though, that he was, you know, Cromwellian in the sense that he was a relatively quiet man in his own lifetime. I mean, he wasn't out, swishing swords, but he was very influential. How did that happen?
Well, it's a good question, very good question. He's like you and like a lot of Irish people. They learn the ability to communicate, and the ability to communicate is one of the most extraordinary weapons that we have, that in our intellect and our conscience. John Paul II, Karol Wojtyła, if he didn't become a priest, and if it weren't for Nazism, he probably would have become a famous actor, because he had that ability to communicate, and that's what really, I've seen him, I traveled with him, I traveled across the world with him, I was in New York with him, I was, in Africa, in Croatia, and I saw his ability to communicate with people, and I think that's his real strength. That, you really need to know how effective the spoken word can be in order to really understand John Paul II's power.
None of us could be blamed for thinking that a candidate for sainthood would be somebody who'd be on their knees morning, noon, and night, praying to the Almighty and praying for peace and all of these things that he was very good at. Generally speaking, has in church history have popes been political? I know that those who are anti-church and anti-Rome be the first to say, a bunch of scoundrels, they always were, they always will be. And I'm sure you would have heard that as well. What is the moving onward, if you will?
Well,
is... Yeah, go ahead.
what it is, I think, is when somebody speaks of with such a powerful moral voice as John Paul II and yeah. other people, Fulton J. Sheen is another one, even your own John O'Connor up there in New York City
right.
Was one of those heroes. When they speak out with that kind of moral voice, you already know that they're going to get incredible backlash
right.
and criticism from some quarters. And so the test, though, Adrian, is whether or not they have the courage to want to speak out and defend their principles and their values, or do they just want to sit back, live the nice, easy life, do a lot of ceremonial events,
right.
and be accepted and praised by the entire community. That was not John Paul II.
I want to touch on, excuse the pun, a very touchy subject. One which affects Ireland today. We have a Prime Minister, a Taoiseach of Ireland, who is and has been a practicing Catholic his entire life. The Supreme Court in Ireland has ordered the Taoiseach and the current government to put in place abortion legislation. This comes on the heels of a very wicked incident which took place in Galway, in a hospital in Galway, where a mother about to give birth wanted, and her husband wanted termination of the baby at that point to save her own life. No hospital in Ireland would have had, under legislation, the authority to proceed with that. We're talking about any hospital, whether, again, even the non-religious affiliated hospitals. So here's a guy who's up against it, who's doing a great job as a government leader of an Ireland that, as we know, had gone through hellish downturn, economy, a rogues gallery of leaders which left the country and still has the country scraping the bottom of the barrel. How do people like yourself, how do those who say that, for instance, Cardinal O'Malley up in Boston there wanted, because the Taoiseach Enda Kenny was coming to, invited to give commencement services at Boston College, he and several others said he should stay, Enda Kenny should stay at home. And the Cardinal asked Boston College not to invite him in the first place. Where is the middle ground here? For those who have, for whom it is a conscience matter, like yourself, and that matter, myself, is there any middle ground at all?
Yeah, there is. I mean, you still, I maintain, you know, I'm not saying it, you know, to pat myself on the back, but I was the leader, if you will, in Massachusetts of the
right.
pro-life movement at one point in time.
Absolutely.
I was also the highest vote getter in the history of Massachusetts. That includes Ted Kennedy and Kerry and all these
right.
these other ones. And this is regarded as a very liberal, pro-choice state. The middle ground
a lefty Democrat, tell it like it is.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. And, you know, I as I said, I learned my philosophy, my politics, not at Harvard, but I learned it from the, you know, my mother and father and my grandparents, my neighbors from Ireland and my church. That's where I learned my politics. So it was all about helping people And it was always about reaching across the aisle and working closely with people that are not the same party, of the same religion, or the same color, mm-hmm. but working together on those issues of common ground. Now, I think that's the key to this whole thing. Why can't political leaders, I'm not familiar totally with right. Prime Minister Kenney, but why can't leaders, and I think Bill Clinton did a bit of this,
mm-hmm.
Why can't leaders reach across the aisle, bring people together, work with them on homelessness and hunger and AIDS and, you know, all those kind of social issues that are so important, and at the same time maintain those issues of that we believe as Catholics that are important to our traditional values. I don't see any contradiction. I see it as a continuity of mm-hmm. what we're supposed to do as human beings. Forget the fact that we might be Buddhist or we might be Muslims or we're Protestant or Catholic. I think that that's the goal of a politician, and that is to bring people together, not separate them on divisive issues or on any issue that divide people. And that can be done. Now, you're not always going to have unanimity. You're always not going to get everybody to agree. But as long as they think that you are consistent in your beliefs and your values and what you're saying and what your positions are and how you vote, I think people will kind of accept that and kind of look the other way, even on issues that are strong issues, that are important issues, that they don't necessarily agree with you on. Now, regarding Kenny, I will say this. I didn't understand why he decided or make the statement to close or to recall the ambassador to the Holy See from the Republic of Ireland. I don't understand that. I mean, we've maintained embassies across the world when there have been tyrants there, when there's been, you know, issues of war and division and polarization. You know, you're not going to solve the problem. You're not going to bring people together if you just ignore them and you decide not to have any kind of communications whatsoever.
Oh, boy. Here we go. Because you will remember that during the... That Rome, and far be it for me to knock your alma mater there, U.S. ambassador to the Vatican, but Rome and the Vatican was much less than straightforward at a time when the Irish government and under the leadership of indeed Enda Kenny, when they were very serious issues with respect to abuse by the clergy. Now, this has got nothing to do with abortion or abortion issues. And there was a very, one might have to say, disgruntled ambassador from the Vatican to Ireland who was basically acting up, let's just say. And to that end, there was a very good reason for, to have that type of, reaction. The appointment of an ambassador belongs to, as you know, you were chosen, to represent the United States in the Vatican. The Vatican did not offer an alternative to Ireland and say, okay, well, this guy's, this ambassador isn't being well received. So that's just an issue, that I would see from the center, as it were.
Yeah, I mean, there was a very serious difference of opinion as to how the Catholic Church in Ireland handled the clergy sex abuse scandal, and the church in many cases was absolutely wrong. And the Prime Minister, the Taoiseach, had every right in the world to bring that to the attention of his ambassador, who would bring that information to the Holy See. I mean, look, nobody had more of a contentious situation starting out in this business than I did.
I know that.
I mean, I was representing a decidedly pro-choice, liberal kind of administration.
Right.
To a conservative Vatican, and when I left there, it was the relationship was not only open, but it was respectful, and that's the key, Adrian. The key is not winning or losing. The key is everybody getting along so much so that they can at least talk and communicate with each other.
Yeah.
You don't collect all these big salaries for closing the door and ignoring the other point of view.
That is another issue, and and Ron and I accept very much your views, as we do for decades on radio. We always on Irish radio, we always value your opinion, and also you might tell us now that for those who didn't get an opportunity to read your book. You wrote about John Paul II, the Pope, and the man. Now, you could change the cover there and add the saint, the Pope, and the man.
Yeah, exactly. Now there it is. I saw the potential in this man at a very early period of time, 1969 in Massachusetts. I had been attending Harvard.
Right.
And I was studying economics, both at Harvard and at Providence College, and I was studying the social and economic justice teaching of Pope Leo XIII. Now, that was the first major Vatican encyclical on social justice. Mm. As a matter of fact, your listeners would be happy to hear that I used to have this conversation in a very, very positive way with my great friend, Paul, and yours, Paul O'Dwyer. And we had this conversation in the presence of Bill Clinton, before Bill Clinton became president and before he made his statement about becoming president, about on Northern Ireland, which led to the Good Friday Peace Agreement.
Yes.
What we talked about social justice, about bringing people together, and that's what I saw in Carol Voitier and John Paul II.
Yeah.
And he talked about that in Rome. He talked about that in Poland. He always used to say, be not afraid. I saw him say that to a million people who were afraid. But when he said that, this is when martial law meant that five or more people that congregated were in violation of the national law in Poland. He said it, and it gave them the inspiration and the encouragement to carry on, to do their work, and to live their lives and raise their families and the traditions and the values that they believed. That is what I talk about with leadership, that this man that I recognized at such an early age, that's what I try to capture in my book. And I think I did, because here we are. We're still talking about it today.
Still,
and thank
you
for bringing it up.
Now, tell me, the publisher, how would somebody get a hold of your book at this stage?
Well, not only did I write the book, it's by St. Martin's Press right there in New York.
St. Martin's, yeah.
Yeah, and so that they could pick up the phone and call them and just say, let's get another. They should do another printing of the book with this update about now the Pope, the man, and the saint. As you, this is your idea now, so I'll have to give you a little bit of royalties on that one.
I'd love to continue talking to you, but actually, you have usurped John Deary's slot, and you and I know. That no matter how significant and important this conversation is, to get John in a sniff on a long holiday weekend is not good for either one of us.
Well, I know how to deal with that. I will just say this publicly. The reason why the Good Friday Agreement came to the success that it did, and that means that we appointed a peace envoy to Northern Ireland.
Absolutely.
I carry that message to Bill Clinton, to Jerry Brown, and I got the idea from John Deary.
Yeah.
He goes in the history books as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, well, now you have to go in the history books, or else you send me in there, too, if we don't get on to it. Listen, Ambassador Mayor Ray Flynn, thanks a million, as always. We're delighted to you know, to get your views and your opinions, and we're the better for it.
I'm going to listen to a bit of Irish music. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Friends, you are listening.